back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Time now to talk Texans with ESPN Texans reporter DJ Bienemé. Brought to you by Houston Powder Coaters and the DraftKings Sportsbook at Golden Nugget Lake Charles.
DJ Bienemé with us in the studio. He didn't like the last segment that we did. We were talking about the man who did not have his headphones on in the bathroom.
I just want to know, like, how were you so attentive to know all these things while another man's urinating?
I mean, it's playing through his phone while I was urinating. So
it's a small bathroom.
I'm not whistling to myself.
It was, I had to pee in a toilet.
Yeah, he was watching a video about, like, the history of peeing in toilets. I'm not kidding. It is funny, right? I mean, if it had been anything else, I'm not sure I would have noticed it. But it's something you're definitely going to notice while you yourself are peeing in the bathroom. I remember there was one thing that was said there. I'm not going to repeat this because this was a little bit gross that was in the video. But I remember there was one thing that was said along the way and I was like, whoa, what? Because it was talking about something that I was like, is this person looking about whether or not he needs to go see a doctor? Like, I don't. Anyway. You know who else might have needed to go to the doctor on Monday?
Caleb
Williams. Yeah. He got absolutely beat. DJ, I could not have been more impressed by the defensive effort by the Texans on Sunday. The pass rush, the ability to stop the run, the coverage from Derek Stingley, from Kamari Lassiter. Do you think that was the best defensive performance for D'Amico Ryans to this point in his time as Texans head coach?
Nah, I think the Titans game in Nashville, I think they got a 7 sacks.
Last year, you're right.
Yeah, they held to like 7 points or something like that. And then
with Case Keenum under center.
Right, and I think because Case threw a pick six in that game, and outside of that, it was just field goals, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's up there. The playoff game against the Browns, obviously hold them to 14 points, 2 pick sixes, that's up there. Yeah, so I would say, you know, this past one,
one of the
up
best
there for
ones.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's up there for sure. I'm trying to think of maybe another one. Yeah, no, but that one's for sure top three. I think you are between those other two. When you consider the magnitude, what was at stake and things of that nature. Those two are probably top two, but then that one, the one on Sunday is probably three.
Any of that, you know, or how much of this translates, do you think, going forward? Or how much of it was just, well, it's a rookie quarterback. D'Amico blitzed 41% of the time.
Like, yeah.
How much of it's sustainable versus maybe this was just really taking advantage of an inexperienced quarterback?
Yeah, I think the latter. They were just taking advantage of an inexperienced quarterback because D'Amico doesn't really blitz that often. He's more of a four-man pass rush and then, you know, have as many people in coverage as possible. He blitzed a little bit more mainly because it was clear that, you know, the O-line was going to have some issues picking up some of the blitzes. Caleb was going to hold the ball. So they're going to really be able to get after him, and his coverage on the back end was effective. So I think it's probably the latter. I don't think they could blitz 40% of the time if they're going against, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes or somebody. You know, I think those guys would be able to pick it apart. But a young quarterback like Caleb in his second start, who tends to want to hold the ball and play off script anyway, yeah, that's usually how he plays those guys. He plays those guys, you know, trying to really get after them, sends them heat. He did that against Lamar in the playoff game because once you speed up their clock, that's when, like, a lot of them, you know, they go into just trying to turn a hero ball. And once they turn Caleb into hero ball, they had them where they wanted them.
It was fun to watch him trying to be elusive, but, man, that guy got absolutely beaten up on Sunday. I definitely am a big believer that he's a tough SOB playing quarterback if he's able to make it through that game healthy. Now, continuing to talk about the Houston Texans defense after holding Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears to 13 points in Sunday Night Football, two guys that have really jumped out defensively for the Texans to open up the year, Jalen Petrie, who everyone thought had the hit of the game on that hit on that Bears tight end where everyone thought at first, oh, wait, that has to be a dirty hit. Then you see the replay. Oh, nope, clean.
Right.
You also got Henry To'oTo'o, who has been racking up tackles these first two games. Between those two, who's been the most impressive Texans defender?
Between those two, that's a good one. I'm gonna lean Petrie. I'm a little biased though, but I'm gonna lean Petrie.
Why are you biased about Petrie?
You know, I like Petrie.
You like Petrie? Okay.
Yeah, I like Petrie. Me and his dad, you know, we text quite often.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we text pretty often, you know.
So you're part of the family, basically.
I won't say I'm part of the family, but, you know, I'm an associate of the family.
Okay.
But, yeah, I would say, yeah, PG. PG's been pretty good in coverage. Obviously, he's been a force in the run game. Him and Henry both have had good impact in terms of being able to limit teams running the ball, because I think the past 2 weeks, I don't think a running back has got over 50.
You're right.
2 weeks, so I think
Swift was 12 for 14.
Yeah. So they've been stout, you know. And Petrie around the box is an impact player. So I would still lean towards Petrie because he's been good in coverage, and because teams haven't picked on him, teams haven't been able to pick on him, and then obviously he helps a lot in the run game.
When you look at Lassiter, what his Pro Football Focus grades, what 90 plus at this point, he's only given up one catch on the season, and you got Kalen Bullock, who had a good week one. Are you still surprised to see like the rookies on defense making the level of impact they are this quick?
First and foremost,
you don't like Pro Football Focus?
I don't like Pro Football. I don't like their grades.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's not here nor there. I would say, am I surprised that they're continuing making plays? No. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, you know, they've kind of hit the ground running. You know what I mean? Like, they've both been able to make plays. Kamara basically had two interceptions. Both of them were acrobatic catches. I didn't know he had hands like that. He was able to make plays. Bullock hasn't given up any explosives. He had the DPI, but he was trying to make a play on the ball, you know, kind of rookie thing. He'll learn how to drive it on, in breaking route of that magnitude down the seam. He'll get better at that. But outside of that, I think I've been wildly impressed with how they perform, because that's allowed them to play at the level that they've been able to play at, last game. Obviously, the Colts game was up and down. They had moments, but it was still kind of up and down as defense. But obviously on Sunday, with those two playing as well as they did, that allowed the entire defense to play as on one accord.
We're still, offensively, seeing a lot of success with C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. Feels like 3 to 4 plays a game, where all you can do is just say, wow, that was really impressive. But they're definitely, if we're talking about the part of the Texans that maybe has had the most issues to this point this year, it's probably been the offense, because it's held up to such a high standard going into the year, adding Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell being healthy again. What do you think has been the biggest issue for the offense to this point?
I would say, because, it's not like, I asked D'Amico, what can they do to get those two guys more involved, Dell and Diggs? And then rewatching it, I think they've tried to get Diggs involved. I think it's just been more like defenses have taken him away at times, or the coverage for the route that he's running doesn't, you can't throw the ball there. So I would say some of the disguises post-snap have kind of given Bobby and CJ some issues in terms of play design and getting the ball where it needs to go. I would say that's probably the biggest issue right now, and which is why at least some clunkiness versus where it's CJ. I mean, it's a lot. CJ to Nico, they've been doing that since last year, so I think it's easier that there's specific plays that they can call that they can rely on to get Nico the ball. I mean, it's clear, right?
It's crazy, too, because I thought about this after the game. You know, Nico Collins wasn't with C.J. Stroud this offseason. He was with Diggs. He was with Tank Dell.
Right.
And yet, all that time away, it's just like they left off.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, where C.J. is really accurate at, where he wants to get the ball, is over the middle of the field, and Nico is able to get into those windows with ease consistently. He's able to get into specific windows that's behind the linebackers, in front of the safeties, but away from the cornerbacks, and able to just get in that area like consistently. So again, it's like for them, it's like riding a bike. So I would say when it comes to just finding ways to get Diggs and Tank more involved, it's going to be on Bobby to figure out which ways to make it happen to where it's within the flow of the offense versus when it can feel like it's being forced. Because, I remember like there was one drive where, CJ threw out route to Dell, and I think it was after a hurry. It was hurrying up, and he tried to force it to Dell. I mean, and it was, it could have been completed, but just trying to get him to rock, and I don't know if that was necessarily within the flow of the offense, and that can kind of create some clunkiness. But I do think they have to figure out how to get them all going to where like they're playing off of each other, not to where it's okay, well, let's design this play for Diggs. If he gets it, great. If not, blank. If it's get it for Nico, if it's there, great. If it's not, blank. Because I think you have these guys so they can feed off of each other, versus if it's just designed to get one guy the ball, if it's not there, then you know, try to work to the other guy. But if their routes aren't, you know, I guess benefiting off of each other, if a DB takes away Nico, but the route for Diggs or let's say Tank isn't, you know, kind of benefiting off of that, and they can take still take away Tank and, you know, Diggs, the play's kind of dead. And that's what it felt like at times, you know, where it's just like if the primary guy isn't open, going through the progression doesn't necessarily mean that the other guy is going to be open because the route combinations are effective in that aspect. So it feels like they're still trying to figure that out, and the sooner they figure it out, the better. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be something that's going to be fixed this week or next week. I think it'll be a whole season thing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the hardest part about watching, you know, the NFL right now and the Texans is that, you know, I saw the stat flying around that, what, 2 years ago there was 110 touchdown passes the first two games, the first 2 weeks of the season across the league. This year it's at 71. It dropped from, like, 88 last year. So, like, the offense is just it's just poor across the league right now. So I kind of with you where, like, it's going to take some time to figure this out. So how much of this is just is learning and rust? Like, when you're, you know, when you're writing articles and you're viewing this team versus just like, hey, maybe it's just not as good this year.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, not as good this year. And defenses are running way more too high and they're disguising so much better now. Because that's another thing too, right? Like, CJ, a lot of times when he's dropping back, the coverage that he's expecting might not be it, but it's not even necessarily his fault. Like, there was one play where, like they motioned across. It might have been – it's a play where he got sacked up the middle. It was, like, second half. But, like, they motioned across. It looked like single high. And then the cornerback was still in his same spot post-snap, but he kind of went to more, like, of a deep – he basically, like, replaced the safety. Mm-hmm. So while he was off-ish, he just kind of slid over. And then you had the nickel corner going to the flat. So basically inverted cover two, right? And it was against the Texans' trips look. And Nico was open on that backside dig. But, like, that is – if you're motioning to the right side, like, your read is over there. Trying to get back over to, you know, the backside, especially if it looks like it's single high. And then you look back – obviously, I'm not CJ, but I can only imagine – if you see single high and it's not that and you're getting back over there and you still now you kind of see two, but you thought it was one and the guy that's deep is the cornerback. So like that and everything is split seconds. So I think it's more like just getting a beat on what these defenses are doing and then figuring out ways how to consistently attack it. But right now, you know, Gus Bradley did a good job of disguising. So the Eagles did a great job of disguising. Like, and that's why this week it's going to be a tough battle because Brian Flores does a great job of that because, like, he'll put a bunch of guys at the line of scrimmage. And sometimes you'll see Harrison Smith hovering outside the right outside the left tackle or right tackle. And then once you say hi, he's at center field or he's at the deep hash, you know. So, like, it's going to be an interesting battle this week. And, like, you know, Sarge and Chance are arguing about it. Like, Sarge thinks that the Vikings have no chance at winning. And I'm like, I don't know about all that.
They have a very good coaching staff, yeah, and it's exactly. Not just Brian Flores, who I totally forgot was their defensive coordinator
right.
Until you just mentioned it right now. I think Flores is a very good defensive coach, but also Kevin O'Connell, he can make it work, and there's a reason that there's so many NFL people that love Sam Darnold. I have never counted myself as one of them, but there is a skill set there that I feel like if the right coach, theoretically, could get the most out of him. Through 2 weeks, we've seen that. We'll talk a little more about the Vikings in a bit. The Texans' violence defensively, really...
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Right.
And it wasn't just Petrie and Toa. What did you make of Azeez Al-Shaahir on the sideline, essentially in a 1-on-9 scenario, right, saying, you know what, I'm just going to smack Roshon Johnson in the face?
Man,
he had a great explanation about it afterwards. I stand with Azeez Al-Shaahir.
Because you're a homer. But I don't disagree. But
strike first, Cobra Kai, baby.
I think it doesn't just kind of flow back into what we saw throughout training camp, the physicality that they had. Like, I'll never forget that June practice, that late July practice, excuse me, where Jimmy Ward tries to knock out Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Derek Stingley basically shoves Dalton Schultz to the ground. Like, I remember Jeff Okuda knocking out Robert Woods and then doing a rockabye baby pose after he knocked him down. It's funny because, like, he was like, oh, snap, I knocked him down. Then he just started doing rockabye baby pose. So, like, this kind of, like, fits into, like, the tenacity that this defense wants to have, and it's something that was on display throughout training camp
and in the game too. I the hits on Caleb Williams, they were hard hits, you know? Yeah, I mean, yeah. We're not just the sacks. We're talking the ones downfield.
I mean, like, it was all clean, and, like, they were dominating them. They had no answer.
It was
like,
great.
It was just – that was – I think that's what really just stood out. Like, it just seemed like a different defense than we've ever seen D'Amico run. The stunts, everything, the blitzing, like, just to see, like, that pivot, you know, especially when you look at their schedule. And, like, you have Sam Darnold, who has experience, yes, but, like, you have Trevor Lawrence, who's struggling. You have – Jacoby Brissett or Drake May coming up. You have maybe Malik Willis coming up. Like, they're going to play a lot of quarterbacks, but, like, they're going to be able to take advantage and just, like, make them miserable for teams this
year.
Yeah,
nah, for sure. I think Caleb was more of a, you know, they saw obviously saw something on film that they thought they could exploit, and they, you know, they kind of waited a little bit to the second half to really tick up the blitzing.
Well, like, they really adjusted because, like, you know, Collinsworth was going through on the broadcast where, like, Caleb was getting the ball out in 2.5 seconds. The Bears were moving the ball well down the field, and then all of a sudden, it just stopped.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that was, you know, changing up the looks, some of the pressures, things of that nature. And I think that – I think this is more of, like, a game plan-specific, you know, approach for this week, because D'Amico would rather have four get to the quarterback and let, you know, just sit back in coverage. That's what he prefer to do. That's what him and Salo, that's what they love to do. If they're blitzing a lot, that's more game plan specific for that week. And I think Caleb showed that if you can just have bodies around him, you could rattle him based off of what we saw. What I saw against Tennessee. It was a similar thing. Like, if you got bodies around him, he was going to try to turn the hero ball and try to run around like he was playing against Utah. And obviously, this ain't the Pac-12, and they were able to take advantage of that.
DJ Bienname, ESPN, Houston, Texas beat reporter with us in studio. Joe Mixon suffers the ankle injury in Sunday Night Football. And we can talk about the hip jog tackle if you want in a moment, but I want to focus just on the running game for the Texans without the Colts run defense against them, who looked really bad against the Packers, even though Malik Willis was under center for them this past Sunday. And without Mixon, the Texans running defense or running offense, not a good day for them at the office. I know the Bears have a good run defense, but say Joe Mixon's out for a while, what are they going to do? Do you expect them to stay where they're at with the running back group? Akers had a couple of nice runs, but that fumble, I would imagine, is definitely not going to help him earn trust.
Yeah, I would say, you know, running back by committee with Dare.
Do you think Dare's first?
No, it'd be Damian first.
Damian first if he's healthy.
Yeah, Dare as your third down back and then, you know, rotate. On clear running situations, Cam and Damian. But, yeah, I think it'd be those three. And I think, you know, Joe's availability this week is going to be a big factor this week, because I think the Niners, they were able to move the ball last week because they were able to run the ball, because there were a lot of times where they were switching up that picture on Brock post-snap a lot. And there were a lot of times where he would look right and then, like, what he thought was there was no longer there and he would try to take off. And I think there could be a lot of that this week with CJ if they can't run the ball. You don't want to get third and longs against Brian Flores. He'll have you in absolute hell. So the run game is going to be very, very vital. Like, if they got to run the ball, like, on first and second down sometimes just to kind of keep that, you know, blitz out the way just a little bit, they're going to have to do that. You know, I think this is they threw the ball 40 times. Well, they dropped back 39 times. To 21 rush attempts minus the kneel down, that formula won't work this week against the Vikings and that secondary along with that coach, that won't work. They're gonna have to be a lot more balanced, and Joe Mixon is very vital to that because he has vision and power that nobody else on this in that running back room has.
Do you have any vibes of, like, you know, or anything you've heard about how long Mixon
the aura
could be out for?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to be too crazy. Like, okay. I could see maybe, like, him missing, like, a week. Because he came back in the game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and he had a couple of carries. So, I think if he missed, it would just be this week, and then he'll be back. I could potentially see him missing this week. Kind of like, I remember when Tyreek kind of rolled his ankle on Monday Night Football last year. And he finished the game, but he missed that week against the Jets. And then he came back the following week against the Cowboys. So, I think I could see a scenario. Because, like, the fact that Joe came back into the game is a good sign that it's not going to be long term.
I remember when he came back into the game, and I was surprised. I was like, wait a second. That injury looked horrible.
Right,
what happened? Right, but he did come back in for a little bit of time. So we're all hoping that he's going to be okay and be back sooner rather than later. Vikings in Minnesota on Sunday. I'll add some more reasons why I agree with you. I don't think this is a lock for the Texans. I thought this past game for the Texans was going to be a lock.
Yeah,
it's a tough place to play. That's one of the louder stadiums in the NFL. People don't really talk about how loud it is there.
That's what I've heard.
You've also got in O'Connell, a guy who just seems to know how to get the most.
What'd you call him?
Kevin O'Connell?
Oh, I thought you said Ken O'Connell.
Okay. My bad. Sometimes the words, they slur when I speak a little bit too fast. Oh, when he's drinking. No, don't worry. We don't do that until after the show. But Kevin O'Connell, he's found a way at least these first couple of weeks to make it work with Sam Darnold. And the funny thing is, seems like some people expected that to happen. Not a lot of people, but some people expected him to figure out a way to make this thing work. They're 2-0, one of the surprises of the NFL season to this point, especially beating San Francisco to get that second win. What is it, based off of what you've seen, what you've heard about from the Vikings, that has allowed for this start, other than Justin Jefferson, and we'll see what's his status with the quad injury.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sam's playing complimentary football, and, you know, obviously he still has a couple of turnovers, but their defense is... They're playing, like, I think as a team, they're playing complimentary football where, like, the defense is putting the offense in good positions and vice versa. Solid special teams, things of that nature. So that's why I think it's more that. Obviously, Sam has been effective, and Kevin O'Connell is able to get, you know, some decent play out of quarterback. We saw what he did with Josh Dobbs last year where he got him basically off the street and was able to make him play decent football until, you know, they put him under the lights and he started to vomit all over himself. But, you know, Kevin O'Connell is – he's a former quarterback. And he's been in the Sean McVay system, so he knows how to, you know, put quarterbacks in advantageous situations. It just won't last that long, I think, with Sam Darnold because it is Sam Darnold. But usually if you're going to get decent play from a, you know, a castaway guy, it's usually early on in the season versus late because there's not that much film. Because, like, you're trying to mirror when you're game playing, you're trying to mirror what does Sam Darnold do well along with what Kevin O'Connell, you know, calls. And it's too early to really have a great beat on what that is actually going to look like. You're kind of still giving like educated guesses. But I would say by week 5, 6, 7 is when, you know, Sam will come back down to earth. But the Texans ain't playing him in week 7, 8, 9, 10. They're playing him in week 3. So I can see it's another scenario where he's efficient again. But I think this game's going to come down to which defense makes just enough plays and who can keep it. I think it's the race to 24 points. The first guy at 24 probably wins the game.
Man, might be 20. They didn't get the 20 last week. No Jefferson, no Addison potentially this weekend. Like, both guys are questionable.
I think Jefferson will play.
Yeah. I kind of hope he does.
You got him on fantasy team?
No. I want to see him versus Stingley.
I don't think we should leave him Stingley one-on-one
no,
with Jefferson.
I don't think so either. Well, it can't be Jimmy Ward back there.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, nah. Like, as much as I love Stingley, you don't leave. I wouldn't leave Darrell Revis one-on-one. Against Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, but, like, it's just, like, because, like, that's always the Stingley hype goes back to that video from his freshman year going one-on-one versus Chase and Jefferson at LSU. So, like, I think it's a fun matchup this weekend.
It will be a fun matchup. I would like to see it, too, but please give Derek some help. Or just put Derek on a number two wide receiver, let him erase him, and then double Justin Jefferson with Kamari and the safety up top.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You know. It'd be entertaining, but, you know, Justin Jefferson, he went 97 against two guys.
Yeah, but the ref was faster.
I know.
That ref was running down the field.
Would you have beat him in a race, Paul?
No.
You don't think you'd beat him in a race? I'd have beat him in a race.
Yeah, you ran track.
I'd have beat him in a race.
Yeah.
But he was high-stepping, though.
Way too early prediction for Sunday. Who's the first to 24? It's Tuesday. It's relaxed. Just give us a take. Just give me a juicy take.
24?
Who's the first of 24? Well, you said first of 24, probably.
I feel like the Vikings would be the first of
24. Oh, damn, dog! Damn.
It's all right. We know how DJ's takes.
Who'd you rather have, a homer or that guy right here?
I mean, he picked the Colts to win the division.
So. I switched it. Only
he did
that
switch.
Way. I know. That's what we're saying. Paul said it's early. You've got till Friday when you go on with the Killer Bees to switch your pick.
And I switched it. You know what?
I bet this is because you were telling us you were having the conversation with Big Sarge Sports and Chancellor Johnson, and Sarge is so confident. I feel like you are just naturally being a contrarian because of the confidence I'm assuming Sarge spoke with, the gusto.
Nah. I was thinking that prior to even knowing what Sarge Tate was.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, if the Texans win, I mean that's great for business. So you know,
Vikings 3-0.
Never against the Texans winning. I'll say that much. So
he is DJ Bienname. You can catch his work for ESPN covering the Houston Texans on the internet. DJ, always appreciate you joining us, man.
No problem.
In case you missed it, everything over the weekend we didn't get to the last 2 days is next. Galan and George, stay put.
ESPN 97.5.